on WSLR LP 96.5 in Sarasota. This is Florence Farringer with your WSLR News headlines for May 7th, 2024. The Florida Democratic Party has ditched the donkey, replacing the centuries-old mascot with the native Florida panther. Or as Florida Democratic Party Chair Nikki Fried put it, quote, "We gave the donkey the boot, it's time to kick ass in Florida." Nikki Fried was the only major challenger in the 2022 Democratic gubernatorial primary and was elected as chair of the party just over a year ago. The new mascot has provoked positive and negative reactions, with some commenters appreciating the representation of an iconic Florida native species, and others calling it ironic. Florida Republican Chair Evan Power having addressed Fried directly, saying, "The choice in changing your mascot from a donkey to a Florida panther is particularly fitting, with its status as an endangered species." On May 3rd, Sarasota County issued a burn ban ordinance. This seems to be a symptom of a greater drying trend for the Suncoast, as it experienced its driest year on record in 2023, when the county experienced 2 feet less rain than usual. While the burn ban is in effect, outdoor burning and open fires are prohibited across the county, save for grills or small fire pits. The last time a burn ban was put into effect was 2022. The Sarasota Manatee Metropolitan Planning Organization, or MPO for short, wants to hear from you. Sarasota Manatee MPO Executive Director David Hutchinson described their main priority as enhancing safety and improving the travel experience for everyone. This survey acts as phase one of their 2050 long-range transportation plan. They're looking for the community's wants and needs when it comes to transit. You can participate by going to surveymonkey.com/r/SMMPO. That's surveymonkey.com/r/SMMPO. Gas prices are predicted to drop over the course of this week, having reached a statewide average of $3.61 per gallon on Sunday. That's just 3 cents shy of the highest price this year, which was reached this past Friday. Crude oil prices per barrel dropped below $80 last week for the first time this year, acting as a portent for lower prices at the pump. This has been Florence Farringer with your WSLR News headlines for May 7th, 2024.
WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota. This is the Healthy Living Hour, airing live every other Tuesday from 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. My name is Rebecca, and I am your host. A huge thanks to our soundboard operator, Alvaro Montalegre. We couldn't do this without you. Our goal here on the Healthy Living Hour is to offer a wide variety of topics and guests to better inform and educate our community on current health and wellness issues. As a disclaimer, everything said here today is uncensored, can be extremely diverse, and does not necessarily reflect the views of WSLR, nor their staff or volunteers. Further, no one here is providing any type of medical diagnosis, treatment, nor advice. Everything said here on the Healthy Living Hour is solely for general information and to foster critical thinking. We encourage you to consult your doctor for personal medical advice. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us today. And we have a very special guest here with us. So as many of you know, we just had the Sarasota Film Festival last month. And we have one of the film directors, TV directors, KT Curran. And she had her newest, most recent film, The Fentanyl Project, premiering there, and it will be airing this month also on PBS. So, KT Curran, thank you so much for joining us. And I guess rather than me tell about you, I'll give you the opportunity to share what you'd like.
Well, thank you so much, Rebecca. It's just a delight to be here. And I really appreciate your platform about healthy living. It's vitally important. I know for myself, with every year I get older, healthy living becomes more and more important. And, exercise, balance, good food, good rest, mindfulness, being calm, all those things are just so important in a busy and chaotic and changing world. Yeah. So I am the director, as you said, of the Fentanyl Project. I am the director of Wingspan Productions, a nonprofit film company that makes films about the most pressing issues of our time that impact all our lives, and particularly young people, young adults. I've always wanted to give young adults a platform for the issues that concern them and prevent them from living healthy futures. And a young man that I know, Matthew Kraft, a young man in his 20s, recently lost his 24-year-old sister to fentanyl poisoning. And she took what she thought was a Xanax that she had gotten from a friend. And it said Xanax on the pill, but it in fact was loaded with fentanyl, enough to kill someone 50 times over. It was so much fentanyl in that tiny little pill. And the family was devastated at the loss of this beautiful young woman, a Sarasota woman, and are just reeling from the tragedy of it. And her brother, Matthew, asked if Wingspan could perhaps address the issue of fentanyl poisoning. And he was so grief-stricken that I instantly said, yes, I will, I promise. And I thought it would be a 30-second public service announcement. And as I began delving into fentanyl poisoning, and particularly with fake pills, and how that's impacting Sarasota County, I was shocked. And the 30-second PSA got longer and longer and longer and became a short documentary, and now is going to be on television, and we're getting requests across the country and across the state of Florida as well as Sarasota. I had paid attention to fentanyl. You hear it on the news every once in a while, and I'm very much aware of issues surrounding mental health. That's kind of what Wingspan Productions is committed to. But I did not know about this phenomenon of fake pills and how prevalent it is and how much it's affecting people across our country. So I interviewed our sheriff, our chief of police, Sarasota Memorial Hospital, medical toxicologists and clinical toxicologists, police officers, and families in the making of this documentary. And I began to see how really illegal fentanyl, and I'm talking about illegal fentanyl created and packaged in labs that are not licensed by drug dealers, cartels, various people, and then bringing that across into our community. And so I felt that we really needed to alert everyone about this, particularly our young people, because from the time they were babies, they trust prescription drugs. You know, they hear that, you know, on the every news show, and their families take it. They've been given everything from Adderall to Ritalin. You know, they don't think if you take a little pill, it's going to kill you. And what's happening now is they're masking it. They buy fake pill presses made to look like legal drugs, and people are taking them. Even babies, like this happened just recently in our community. Someone was in an Airbnb, and their baby opened a drawer, and they saw what they thought was candy, took the baby to the hospital, and it was fentanyl.
Oh my goodness.
And so this is happening. We had a 3-year-old baby die just a few months ago in Sarasota who had inadvertently put some fentanyl in their mouth. And we're seeing this from pets, you know, from, I mean, we have people overdosing in bathrooms of, you know, 7-Elevens and things like that. You know, it's just something that everyone in our community needs to be aware of. I interviewed our sheriff, and he had just come from a meeting of sheriffs all across America, big cities, small communities like ours. And they said, what is the number one problem as sheriffs that you feel that you are addressing and that you are seeing? And everyone said fentanyl.
Wow.
And so this short documentary today is actually Fentanyl Awareness Day, May 7th. And I think on this day, if anyone listening could educate themselves about fentanyl, fake pills, how it affects our community, we are seeing overdoses every week in Sarasota County. And it's not something we see on the front page of the paper, you know, but we need to be aware of this and what we can do to protect ourselves and our families from this deadly scourge.
Yeah, it's a big problem. And I was sharing with you earlier, I had a guest last year who was actually a former nutraceutical rep of mine. And she, there's a Netflix, Pain Hustlers,
yes,
think? Yeah. And she sold fentanyl. She was hired on by this company. It was for breakthrough cancer pain. Like, you've got cancer, nothing's relieving the pain. That's terrible pain. And that's what it was for. But she was instructed to not go to oncologists, which raised red flags in the front of her mind. But they were giving her lists of pain management doctors. And there's actually a pain management doctor here locally who is doing time in federal prison. She ended up testifying at a federal grand jury up in Boston, I believe. And the story is so unbelievable. Like, you're thinking, how can this possibly happen?
Yeah.
And KT, I just want to say again, thank you for being here, because this is so important to get this awareness out. But we are live at WSLR here in the studio. And if you have any questions or you'd like to call in, our studio line is 941-954-8636. And I also have joining me a co-host, John Orsborne of Tao of Wellness, spelled with a T-A-O, Wellness, in Bradenton. And he's a colleague of mine. We've talked about this extensively. And so, yeah, thank you again for joining me again, John.
A pleasure to be here.
Great. KT, who are the, like talking basically about your fentanyl, you know, project film, who sponsored this, if I may ask?
Well, we have several sponsors. A huge sponsor is the Gulf Coast Community Foundation that I feel are champions of mental health for our community. They've done so much for everyone from veterans to young adults to the homeless people, unhoused population. I think they are a phenomenal resource. They have a mental health initiative specifically for young adults. And so they, I think, single-handedly have made this such a much healthier and happier community, Gulf Coast Community Foundation. We also have funding from Roger and Judy Sant, who care so much about young people and have funded many of my films as producers, oh, as well as the Daniel E. Offit Charitable Trust, which was our founding donor. And recently we're taking on, as the Fentanyl Project is rapidly spreading across the state, and I got an email last night, they're saying now they're wanting it across the country, we're having a few other sponsors come on, like Bank of America and LightShare, which is a drug and alcohol rehabilitation and wellness center, formerly known as First Step, and they've come on as one of our sponsors as well. These films can't happen for nothing. I've been working on this for almost a year now, and it's only growing, and we are rapidly trying to keep up with the need for information as people begin to realize the extent. And I want to clarify, it's not that fentanyl that people need to be afraid if they're in the hospital or they have cancer or they're under care of medical care. My own mother, my 90-year-old mother, was given fentanyl when she had heart surgery and was just fine, you know, being monitored by doctors and nurses. But we're talking about illegal fentanyl created in labs where you do not know what you're getting. They're putting this in everything from children's candy to Tylenol to Adderall, Xanax, and selling it as something that it isn't.
Correct. And that's a really good point. And I remember being in a medical conference. This was a number of years ago out in Colorado. And one of the keynote speakers, he was talking about fentanyl and what a big problem it was. But what really stood out to me was that this is terrible, but it's for like a $5,000 investment, it's about $150,000 profit. Like,
yeah, I don't even like to spread that.
I know.
Because there are nefarious, and it is actually 100 times, fentanyl is 100 times more addictive than morphine.
Right.
50 times more addictive than heroin. And so if you sprinkle a little fentanyl in someone's marijuana and it's 50 times more addictive than heroin, they're going to want more of that marijuana. You know, they're going to be addicted very quickly, or that Xanax or that Adderall that has a little bit of fentanyl in it. And you just don't know. You're a young adult with a developing brain. Somebody gives you something at a party. You know, if you survive, the living with that addiction is, it's just such a tragedy. It really is.
Yeah, it robs people of their lives.
Yeah.
And yeah, absolutely. What are some, and I know, like, I encourage all of us to watch your movie when it airs on PBS this month, and that is on the...
May 16th.
May 16th.
It's at 9 p.m. on PBS, WEDU, but I believe they plan to run it for... 2 years, they told me. So people will have a lot of opportunities. They can, I think, even see it on their website, WEDU PBS. A lot of people are watching it with their young people. Like, I know the CEO of WEDU, when he saw it, he called his four sons and asked if he would buy the pizza, and they would come over and watch it together and then discuss it as a family, which I just thought was so wonderful.
Yeah, that's so necessary, especially in our young of the families. Like, parents need to know, teenagers,
grandparents. Youth,
grandparents need to know, exactly.
You're seeing a lot of grandparents because of pain, you know, pain management. Or even like, say you have, recently there's been an Adderall, I believe this is correct, but don't quote me, a shortage. We're having shortages of things like attention deficit disorder medications. And if someone feels they cannot function without that, they might be more likely to buy it through the dark web or through a pharmacy that is unregulated. And they think, what we're also seeing is people go on cruise ships to Mexico and go into pharmacies that are now lined along the shore, right where the cruise ships let off the tourists. And they said, get OxyContin, get Percocet, get no prescription necessary.
Oh, my goodness.
And people go in, families with their young children. And UCLA did a expose where they bought a lot of these pharmaceutical drugs and tested them, and 70% of the drugs they tested had meth or fentanyl. And it was said it was something else, like Viagra, or, you know, you just don't know what you're getting. You have to have a licensed pharmacist when you get prescription drugs, or you're taking your life in your hands. Someone told me if someone gave you a big basket full of M&Ms, this was Matthew's mother, Nanette Cobb, told me this story. Say if I offered you a basket of M&Ms and I said, have some. I said, just want to tell you, one of them is loaded with fentanyl and it will kill you, but only one, you know, so chances are you're not going to get that one. would you eat any of those M&Ms? No. You would say no.
I commend you for doing this film. I think yes. This is something that really is needed. I watched Bridge to the Other Side.
Oh, wonderful.
I was very moved by Surviving Lunch.
Oh, thank you.
That was just... But I noticed a common theme, and I looked up a lot of your other films.
Uh-huh.
And I noticed a common theme in your movies. Mental health.
Yes.
Substance abuse.
Uh-huh.
Teenagers.
Yes.
Relationships. And I just want to ask you, does art imitate life?
Well, in the way that I've always worked with teenagers, and if you work with teenagers and you're trying to encourage them to be healthy and happy, you see how things like mental health issues or substance abuse issues completely derail good decision making. And so I began to realize over many years that unless you address these core problems, like you can't talk to a kid about doing well in school if they're not coming from a healthy home or they're, you know, mm-hmm. struggling with a mental illness that is untreated. And so I began to look at core issues, like how do we be healthy, balanced, and also families, for parents to see how they might inadvertently be affecting, you know, they might be very angry at a child, but you see a parent struggling with alcohol issues. And so they're modeling behavior that is unhealthy for that child. And so I feel that that's vitally important that we look at these things, talk about these things, reduce the stigma, and that then we will see our children thrive.
Did you work with teens prior to becoming a filmmaker?
Yes, I'm a professional actress and director in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
And so for many years, I ran a program called Source Productions where I worked with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of young people doing plays, touring high schools, and dealing with issues that affect their lives. And if you're looking at the issues that affect their lives, you're looking at resilience, mental health, confidence, strength, focus. And out of that, you have to address mental health. With Bridge to the Other Side, I wanted to do something about the polarity in America mm-hmm. because I was feeling that so strongly, this rise in anger, this not listening to each other. But then I thought, unless we can look at mental health, we can't address polarity in America because I feel that is rising out of a rise in anxiety, frustration, opioid addiction, unhoused, people feeling powerless. If we can't address that, we can't stop the arguing, mm-hmm. you know? And so that's basically how my themes have arisen.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you. And KT, I mean, this is just, oh gosh, I mean, what do you see? One, what are some common, if you can share a few key points that you learn some epiphany moments while doing your film project?
The fentanyl
about
project?
Yes.
The biggest one, as I said, was the fake pills, that you can be taking fentanyl and have no idea that you're taking it. I did not know the extent of the overdoses in Sarasota, in our little community. I didn't, just was not aware of how much it was affecting us. I didn't know how it was impacting really our entire country and the whole chain of how it was coming into the country. And basically so much. I basically thought that fentanyl was a problem of people who were formerly addicted to OxyContin. Then we closed the pill mills. Then they turned to heroin. Then we've done a fabulous job eradicating heroin. But just at that moment, fentanyl came flooding in. And as you said, it's cheap, it's easy to transport, and deadly and highly addictive. And so then that's when we really started seeing it go into the whole population at large.
You mentioned learning how prevalent this is, this epidemic, and you kind of made the side note it's not what we read on the front page.
Mm-hmm.
Why? In all of your research, why doesn't this get more public attention?
Well, I think it does get the stories. Like, it has been on the news, but it's not every day on the news. And I personally, during the pandemic, I stopped watching news every day because I was just trying to take care of my own, you know, be calm and be happy and be healthy and go out and walk. And so if you happen to miss that story...
Do you also think it's one of those stories that we've become anesthetized to, that we hear it so much that people just quit listening?
I think so. And I think we've become anesthetized to a lot of terrible things because we have such a barrage of terrible, frightening news, almost too much to handle.
Well, they say that we are inundated in 24 hours to what 100 years ago somebody got in a year.
Yes.
We're just bombarded with this information, and after a while you can't process it.
You can't. And so with the Fentanyl Project, I deliberately kept it very short, very focused, very focused on what are you trying to tell us and what can we control? And so I didn't want to incite panic or tackle the entire fentanyl problem, which is you could make many documentaries. You could look at the border. You could look at the precursors to fentanyl and how it's coming in. You could look at the cartels. You could look at, everything. They find desperate people at the border who are starving and hungry and afraid, and they pay them to take over fentanyl, things like that. And I wanted to focus on the fake pills and alerting young adults, do not go to a party and take a pill, or in school, in the school bathroom, if you are feeling anxious and someone says, here's a Xanax, or you want to study for all night for a test, and someone says, oh, I have an Adderall, do not take that pill. You do not know what is in that pill, and chances are it could be fentanyl.
Did you see substance abuse quite often when you were working with theater?
I did, but it wasn't to the extent where it could kill you. You know, I think kids, you saw it more. Occasionally you would see young people having a real problem with drugs or alcohol, but you weren't seeing the level of overdoses that we're seeing now, or you weren't seeing babies getting it, or, people numerous times in one day overdosing and having to be revived by the police with Narcan. And that's the other thing I'd like people to take away is Narcan can reverse, in many cases, an overdose. But sometimes it takes several tries. And unfortunately, if fentanyl is mixed with other drugs, like xylazine, for example, Narcan will not work. But all the police officers and our EMS technicians now carry Narcan. And so thankfully we are seeing the deaths go down, but not the overdoses. And they attribute that to the use of Narcan. And also many people who are addicted to fentanyl are now keeping Narcan to reverse an overdose. And so you can buy Narcan in Publix or CVS, or it's at our local health department. And like I said, our firefighters, EMS, and police officers and sheriff's department all carry Narcan. Our Sarasota County Sheriff's was the first department in the state to get Narcan for all their officers. And also, I believe, the first in the state to open a recovery pod for people struggling with addiction in the sheriff's department, in the jail. And so a lot of people come in addicted to opioids and through this recovery process in jail are able to turn their life around. So it's a wonderful place to live in Sarasota, I believe, in terms of mental health treatment. And we always could use more, but...
Is that what the holding cell was about?
The holding cell was maybe 12 years ago I wrote that, and that was the very beginning of this opioid problem. And I was trying to alert everybody, like the canary in the coal mine, and people were like, why should we talk to kids about, you know, OxyContin? We don't have a problem with OxyContin. And then because I talk to so many young adults, I often hear things a little bit before everyone else and try to alert people before it becomes a problem.
I wanted to mention that I see often fentanyl being used as like an attack on immigrants, and I don't doubt that and I don't have any evidence, of course, but I don't doubt that some of it may be coming through the border. But I look back 50 years ago as a teenager. At that time, the United States had mafias. The Jewish mafia, the Italian mafia were movers of drugs. It seems like today, and I don't believe it, the United States, it's clean. You know, there are no white people involved in drugs. You know, it's like
only the immigrants.
Other than taking them, like the whites take them.
And what about the white people? Who's taking? Who's buying the fentanyl? Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. I think somehow
it's only Mexicans in Mexico that are moving the drugs, and then as soon as the drug crosses the border, it's magic.
Yeah.
You know, there are no movers.
Nobody
of drugs,
receiving it. Nobody's
no
selling
mafias.
It. Yes.
Right. Everything is
very good point.
All the whites are clean, and all the dirty Mexicans are
so important
the drugs
to make that point. So important to make that point.
Thank you so much. Yes, all of you. Thank you for this really important discussion this morning, and KT for being here. We're about out of time for this portion, but do you have any, while going through and doing this movie, any thoughts on things that you feel would be toward a solution?
I think the solution for immediate solution is not to take anything that hasn't been prescribed by a medical professional and that you buy in a pharmacist. If you have someone who you think might be possibly could be using opioids, to definitely have Narcan in your medicine cabinet, to continue to educate. Like, I think what we've talked about today is so important, not to blame immigrants or blame Mexico, to look at the complex chain of what is happening. You know, I've heard that many, many of our Mexican neighbors would not even go near fentanyl labs or have anything to do with it, because they know, you know, how deadly it is. And so I think working together, we can stop this problem, and it certainly raise awareness of this problem for our young people.
Wow. And KT, thank you for being here again and joining us this morning and giving us this very important insight. And so your film is called The Fentanyl Project, and it will broadcast on WEDU PBS May 16th, 9 p.m. And if people want to find you or learn more about your Wingspan Productions, how do they do this?
Oh, thank you. Yeah. It's wingspanproductions.org.
Great.
Yes.
And thank you again so much for you know, pouring this, your labor of love, into doing things that truly help.
Well, and I can, and the same to you, because this station is so important to all of you, that providing this important information to our community. That's great.
Oh, thank you.
I look forward to seeing your film and encourage others to find what one of them I watched on Tubi. One of them was on Amazon.
Yes.
Yeah, they're out there. They're available.
Yes. Even Hoopla. Do you know that?
Yes.
It's a library. We're on that as well, with Bridge to the Other Side. Yeah.
Yeah, I have that app on my phone.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, thank you again. Thank you again both for being here. Thank you again both for being here today. Again, you are listening to the Healthy Living Hour on WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota. Our next guest is Tracy Troxler and Alexander Thompson of Sunshine Community Compost. What is composting? Why is it important? Here we go on that. Thank you, Tracy.
High as a mountain, deep as a river, come rain, come shine. I guess when you met me.
Tell us a little bit, please, about your background and, you know, how you got into start this and what it's all about.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having us today. I think maybe I'll go ahead and start. Yep. So I'm Tracy, and I'm the executive director of Sunshine Community Compost. And I would say that, what we do is we educate and activate community members in the Sarasota and Manatee County regions to compost, and to help them start wherever they are in their journey of composting and move them along this continuum so that we have lifelong composters and really help create a culture of composting in our region. And so we do that by doing a lot of education and outreach, and we offer food scrap drop-off programs. We help home composters. We help businesses that want to divert food scraps from the landfill. And we host some kind of initiative during International Compost Awareness Week, which it happens to be today, and throughout this week, May 5 through 11. And so for me, I got into this work because I really wanted to be doing work that was in the intersection of human health and planetary health, having had a career in healthcare prior to my work in composting. And it's always been a nonprofit. So I really see that when you combine and have people collaborating with the planet, that we have really good health outcomes for both people on the planet. So that's really what got me into this work. And maybe I'll have Alex go ahead and talk a little bit about himself.
Thank you for having us. And I would say my background and my interest, what led me here, is pretty similar to what Tracy just said. I come at it from a public health point of view, and was really concerned with the lack of food security present in a lot of the U.S. After I was studying that concept for a while, I farmed for about 4 years around the U.S. and realized that soil health is the most important thing that, I mean, we need to focus on that more. And the way we treat our soils as a society is very indicative of the way we treat ourselves, each other, and the world around us. And for me, the act of composting represents a mindset that we need to adopt to heal the world around us and ourselves.
Very good. Thank you. And can you back up just a bit for those out there who might not, this might be a new term, or maybe they're not familiar with it. What is composting exactly?
Yeah, it's basically the transformation of organic materials into a nutrient-rich soil food with the help of microbes and with oxygen, right? So that's basically, it's really simple. It's taking food scraps and ensuring they don't go to waste in the landfill, and they become a resource, which is compost that can be a soil food. So we're just really trying to also help people understand that it's only waste if we put it in the garbage. Until that point, it's a resource that can nourish our landscapes, our gardens, and creating healthy food for everyone. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I was going to add to that real quick, if that's all right. I'd say the biggest difference between the concept of fertilizers versus the concept of using compost comes down to biology versus chemistry. So a lot of fertilizers are pretty much infusing the soil with the exact minerals and salts that we think the plants need. A lot of that gets washed off into waterways, into oceans, and causes pollution in a lot of different ways. Compost is all about introducing biology and life into the soil, because these microbes, they do the job better than we ever could do. So yeah, it's kind of like fostering that life and such.
Yeah, thank you. And I mean, we need this. I think there's a bit of a movement, I'd like to say, myself included, these last number of years, even if you don't have a lot of space here locally in Florida, a lot of us are getting gardens. I have a tower garden, made another raised bed. And there are a lot of us, I believe, that want to grow a little more of our own food when we're able to. And the basis is to just have that natural, healthy soil, that rich, nutrient-dense soil in which to do that.
That's right. And I think what's really like fun about that is that when people do have the ability and the access to grow their own food, then they start to think about what am I going to put in my soil, because I'm going to end up eating it, because you have that really close interaction. And then you start thinking about your soil as this living, you know, web, this living being, you know, part of the planet, you know, all the life in there. So it's really fun that, you know, gardening can back you into compost, which then backs you into what am I doing with my food scraps? And then you're backing into the whole closed loop. So it's pretty amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So can you talk about what's your specific nonprofit, Sunshine Community Compost? You're focused on, you have a unique thing here where you focus on food scrap drop-off program.
Correct. Yes. And that it started with a partnership with the city of Sarasota, who enabled us to set up food scrap drop-off stations within the city parks. And this was because not everybody's comfortable with composting. Not everybody has space for composting. Some people have, you know, very busy lives, but they want to do the right thing with their food scraps. You know, there's lots of reasons, but so we were able to then develop this program, which is based on people collecting their scraps at home, and then they can walk to their closest, or drive, or however they're going to get there, to their closest food scrap drop-off station, and then leave their food scraps, and then we take it from there, and we're able to help with that transformation in partnership with the microbes to create compost that then we can either give back to the people that give us the scraps, or invest into gardens, landscapes, you know, community-based projects that help people see that compost is a community asset.
Mm-hmm. Right. So talk a little bit, if you would, about what's the alternative if we're not recycling our food scraps, basically, you know, you're cutting off the ends of your vegetables, you're peeling things, you know, there's some of the leaves on whatever you have don't look so wonderful. And, you know, rather than just sticking them in the garden, like, tell us about, you know, those differences and what happens with that.
Yeah. I mean, the two main places, the primary place where people generally drop their food scraps is into the garbage, and the garbage goes to the landfill. And the landfill from downtown city core of Sarasota is a 50-mile round trip. And those food scraps there, they get locked in with other garbage. And so we lose the resource. It's very, you know, they're not able to become, you know, compost, right? The other place where people commonly put their food scraps second to the landfill is in the incinerator, down the sink, and, you know, it goes into the water system. So, you know, when food scraps go into the landfill, we really lose all those nutrients that we could have right here in our backyards for growing healthy food and, you know, really nourishing our landscapes in a biologically balanced way. So that's really, those are the two places that they go, you know, and that's what happens. And
and just to add on to that, like, when food scraps go to the landfill, not only are we missing out on returning those nutrients to the soil, they also rot without the presence of oxygen and produce methane, which is, I think, 25 times more potent of a greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. And, you know, people have methane capture systems and stuff that they're trying to implement, and that's nice, but we feel like maybe they shouldn't be there in the first place, and we should start soils.
Yeah, there's a better way. To me, it's just, you know, we separate our plastic, we separate our paper and cardboard, and those we hope get recycled. And then this is just the way to do exactly that for, I think, our local community with the food scraps, to just recycle those and transform it into something very usable.
Yep.
And beneficial.
That's right. That's right. And what he speaks to also is related to the International Compost Awareness Week theme, which is that compost is nature's climate champion. And so, you know, when we are able to make compost and use compost, we really are also helping, you know, with climate change and climate positive behaviors.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this is so important now more than ever, you know. I don't know that where we're getting our food from, the majority of it, where they're doing crop rotation, you know, it's more about this is a cornfield, this is this field, and the soil maybe doesn't get nourished and revitalized. And so this is a piece to that solution for sure.
Right. And kind of on that note, like composting is definitely a big part of the bigger solution to a lot of issues. However, there is a hierarchy that was recently published, I think, by the EPA. What's even better than composting is not having waste, in quotes, to begin with. So finding ways to get food into people and animals' mouths before it gets to a point of rotting and stuff. It's not having waste to begin with and, you know, having people just buy what they need and store their food properly, things like that. So we do kind of want to just like make sure people know that there's a lot of ways to address this issue.
Yeah, you're so right. There's there's a lot to it. And then you have a unique aspect, I would say, where you have different locations throughout the community. And then you pick this up so people don't have to have the big, maybe ugly or not so pretty, you know, barrel looking thing in their front yard or backyard. This is work. I mean, this takes work on you. You have to do things with the, you know, turn the, could you talk about that a little bit? I understand a little of it.
We definitely do things with food scraps. We are very physically active in this work, but the hardest workers are the microbes for sure. They're the ones that are working 24/7 for the benefit of all of the web of life. But what happens is people can bring their food scraps to a food scrap drop-off station. And then from there, we combine those scraps with carbon, water, you know, air, the right ratios that we want to see for a good outcome for making compost. And then in some of the actual locations, we make the compost right on site. And that gives us the opportunity then when people come up and they're depositing their food scraps and they want to know what happens next, they can actually see the compost in process. They can see the thermometer if we bring it out. They can see different stages. And it's always a great way to connect people to the process, and also to help educate people about why we don't want those stickers in there, why we don't want those rubber bands in there, because they're in the finished product, because microbes do not want to eat plastic and rubber, you know, petroleum-based things and whatnot. And then if there's any more than what we can actually handle, this is us tipping these bins over, processing, adding carbon, like carbon being mulch and straw and those kinds of things. Turning it regularly, sifting it, getting it back to the community. If there's more than all with pitchforks, but if there's more than what we can process, then we have partners with other small processors who can, you know, help get that material into compost, and so that we can keep continuing to transform those materials into something beneficial for the community. So it is, it's definitely a labor of love. You have to love this stuff to do it, because as you know, July is coming up. We had a very hot summer last year, you know, and we work with the elements in our compost making, we work with the elements with our own self-regulation, but we are constantly moving, we're going all over town. not only to these food scrap drop-off stations, but we do have a couple of commercial partners. So there are some restaurants and larger food scrap producers in our community that understand the benefit of compost and have, you know, reached out, and we have affiliations with. And in some cases, you know, one of our clients, we're taking out 700 pounds, between 600 and 700 pounds a week, you know. So this is, maybe it's more. That's one load. Twice a week, we'll take 600 to 700 pounds out. So there are an endless amount of food scraps in our community that, you know, really we can be resourcing. So there's a lot of opportunity for growth, and there's a lot of opportunity for different scales. You know, we're very big advocates of home composting, because the most sustainable is to go right from your kitchen to your backyard into your soil. But we also want to have solutions that, you know, fill in the gaps so that we can find people where they're at in their point of entry and move them along a continuum. And in some cases, people will do these drop-off stations, and then they're like, oh, I get this. It's not too complicated. I can do this. And then they say, I'm going to transition in the backyard. So instead of, you know, the drop-off site. So there's, you know, we're just really trying to catch people along an education continuum, fill in the gaps, and then also try to move the movement so forward locally, so that we have more options for everyone. You know, we can meet people where they are at in their composting journey and really see more of this happening in our region and across the state. And even nationwide. But there is a lot of our kind of work, this community composting model, happening all over the country. And we're, in fact, in communication with these different community composters, you know, all struggling with these kind of similar challenges and sharing opportunities and benefits together. And that's like where International Compost Awareness Week, everyone's sort of uplifting composting across the nation and internationally, to bring light to this, you know, really transformative work. You know, it transforms us as much as it transforms the soil outside of us. We are being transformed by this process, because nature is always doing these amazing things that, like, it never ceases to amaze me that a compost, these rotting food scraps turned into this beautiful soil food. I mean, every single time, every single year, every single day. And Alex is with me on that. I mean, he wouldn't be doing this work. You know, we're both, that's kind of where, you know,
totally.
It's a labor of love, I tell you.
It is.
Yeah, and also, like, when you get a sample of compost and you look at it under a microscope, it's just amazing to see the rainforest that's right, like, in every speck of soil that you see. It's just, I mean, teeming with microbes, which is like a well-known book about microbes. But yeah, it's, there's a whole universe in the soil. And we hope as many people who want to get to know it, go for it, because it's there for us and it's awesome.
Excellent. Can you tell me, do you know offhand, I'm just curious, like, say you have a bunch of food scraps and you're just, you know, getting those to break down in compost. How long does it take for something like that to happen?
Mm-hmm. It does. The answer is it depends. For us, when we fill up, you know, a large bin full of scraps, it takes us probably about 2 to 3 months. And then I usually let mine cure another month. But in the backyard compost situation, a lot of people are toss and go kind of composters, and it's a very slow, it's a little bit slower process. And also with the backyard composters, a lot of times you never get enough really volume to have a lot of compost left over. But that is the beauty of it, is that you're making quote unquote waste disappear, and it's just continuing to move into the environment there. But it can be, you know, it depends on your process, what your volume is and how you manage it. For us, we manage it really well. So we're seeing food scraps move rather quickly, because we want to keep it moving, because we keep getting more food scraps, right? So, you know, it can be, you know, it's usually around 3 months, I'd say. And then we usually cure it a little bit longer before we turn it back around. So yeah, Alex is nodding. He's in agreement. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great. And then people can pick up those who drop off the food scraps. They have access to the compost material for their own
A couple times a year, we harvest and we sift it and we bag it up and we let people know your cured compost is ready. And then we get it back to them. So they can, usually we have people just pick it up at the site that they drop it off. So again, with that closed loop, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. And you're implementing one right here at Fogartyville. Can you tell us more about that?
Yes. We are very excited about that because Fogartyville is such a lively place with so many different kinds of people that come and go. And so in partnership with the team there, we had discussed this as an opportunity, and we recently installed a food scraps drop-off station right outside of Fogartyville. And that's something that people can find on our website. They can go and they can register to participate in that. And it's a community builder, which is, you know, as Fogartyville goes, is such a place of community intersection and thriving connections. It's really a privilege to have the chance to have a station right there in downtown, accessible to a lot of places that are like vertical living without yards. Mm-hmm. So it's an opportunity, to move that movement, another pod in, you know, yeah. Yeah. So we're happy about that.
Yeah, I'm so excited to see that and have that right there at our backyard here. Mm-hmm. And where are some of your other locations, if you can share?
Yes. The publicly accessible ones would be Gillespie Park, Arlington Park, North Water Tower Park, the Bay Park, Whitaker Gateway Park, and the Fogartyville station. And then we have a number of other stations where, for example, a local church says our community would like to come to services on Sunday and deposit food scraps. So we work with that particular community. Or we have a condo community that says our residents would really like to have a drop-off station, and we work with that community. So anywhere there's a community either that's existing or that wants to circle around composting, we are continuing to create these food scrap drop-off stations. It's just really about collaborating with whatever the community is and connecting that with collaborations with nature. So we're all working together. So it's always an opportunity if someone wants to discuss, I have a community, we might be interested, you know, we like to follow that line of thinking and see if it's something that can actually work.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think that's great. And, you know, I know so many of us, maybe we don't eat out so much, but we really truly cook at home. And this is just such a great solution to do with those scraps of food.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think this is so important to get this word out. And thank you. Is there anything else you'd like to share?
For me, I just want to let people know that it's very easy. It's really a simple thing. It's just, you know, take the scraps, instead of dropping them in the garbage, drop them in a bucket, you know, and
you're doing all the work.
Yeah, and then let the microbes do the job. Or we'll partner with microbes to make it happen. But it's really, and it's a great way to give back for all that food we already received. It just keeps us in relation and reciprocity.
Oh, thank you. So, yeah, Tracy Alexander, again, we've been speaking with Tracy Troxler and Alexander Thompson with Sunshine Community Compost. Tracy Alexander, if people want more information or they want to find you, how do they do that, please?
I think the best way would be to check out our website, which is sunshinecommunitycompost.org. And our contact info is up there if you want to send a particular specific email. We're also on Facebook and Instagram if you want to follow us or learn what we're up to. Sunshine Community Compost there for those. Mm-hmm.
And we love talking compost. So please reach out if you're interested, because we love talking compost.
Yep, we'll get more.
I will personally. Be doing that. Thank you so much. Thanks for taking time out of your busy week to do this. Really appreciate it. And again, everybody, if you're near to the Fogartyville WSLR location downtown, please come by and find that compost bin. Thanks again. And we'll be talking again. Thanks, Tracy.
Thank
thanks,
you.
Alexander.
Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you, Tracy Alexander, my dear friend John Orsbone of Tao of Wellness in Bradenton, and film director KT Curran for our program today. Join this station, WSLR, next Tuesday at this time for Julie and Jono with Our Changing Environment. And further, if anyone has any topics or areas of interest you'd like to hear on here, please reach out. Email me at healthylivingwslr@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. Again, you are listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota. Please stay tuned for Democracy Now!